Blog Talk Radio.
You unlock this door with the key of willingness. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of peace, a dimension of order, a dimension of agreement. You're moving into a land of both health and harmony, of transformation and solutions. You've just crossed over into the conflict-free zone.
Welcome to the Conflict-Free Zone. I am Paula Langus Ryan, the Compassionate Mediator, and for the next 30 minutes, we will travel together through the landmines in your life that are causing you to feel dis-ease, stress, conflict, making you feel unworthy, or stealing your peace in any area of your life today.
And a very fine Monday morning it is. I hope you had a great weekend. I know it's going to be a short or an odd week this week with the 4th of July falling smack dab in the middle on Wednesday. We will be doing a best of show on Wednesday morning in honor of the holiday. But in the meantime, we've got a couple of really great new live shows for you this week, starting us off. And we're going to start this morning. The chat room is open if you'd like to join me. We're going to talk about some topics that might be some big hot buttons for people, because we have issues with people where we want to make people either a victim or monster. And this contributes a lot to conflict that goes on in our world. So if you'd like to join me on the show, or even just to listen and engage in the conversation, the call line is open, 949-203-4808. You can listen in, or you can let me know if you'd like to join me in chatting about today's topic, if you've got a comment or question. And then, of course, the chat room is open. Just refresh your screen if you're not already available to see it. So we're going to talk about two really hard topics that combine it together for a particular concept that was on my mind this morning. We're going to talk about what makes us forgive someone for something they did or we think they did, and what is quote-unquote unforgivable in our mind. Some of us can forgive certain things. Others of us have a harder time with other things. Harming children is much more unforgivable to many of us than perhaps harming an adult or harming someone who had been abusing his spouse. What we're going to talk about today are two particular cases that really jumped out at me this week in the news. We're going to talk about Dottie Sandusky. For those of you who don't know, Dottie is the wife of former Penn State coach Jerry Sandusky, who was recently convicted of raping and molesting a number of children throughout the country on trips and stuff that were in his care, but also in his home, in their home, and whether or not she knew about that and how that affects our forgiveness of her. We'll also talk about Gary Flakes, a 32-year-old man who's now free after serving more than 12 years for his role in the shotgun slayings of two teenagers. And he's now a motivational speaker. He's a mentor to at-risk youth. He's turned his life around, and yet there are some who would really believe he should still be in prison, serving life in prison. And what we want to talk about is where do we want to believe people are good, and where do we want to believe they can change, and where are we skeptical and why? Because this has a lot to do with ourselves. And we're going to talk about how these beliefs actually contribute to conflict in the world today. So let's take a look at what we got going on here. So Dottie Sandusky, they've been married, her and Jerry Sandusky have been married 44 years. And lots have been written about, you know, if I had known that my spouse was molesting children in general, much less in our homes, what would we do? And a lot of psychologists have said and psychiatrists have said that even the most loyal of spouses, because Dottie has really stood by Jerry Sandusky this entire time, just as the wife of the man, the former man from, oh God, I'm not going to remember what organization he's with. I blocked that already. But the gentleman who was accused of raping a maid in a hotel and then has been accused again and again with new allegations coming up, and he's now resigned from his job, and now his wife, who stood by him all this time, is now leaving him. It's paying attention to, it's not unreasonable to believe that a wife never experienced or never witnessed anything that was going on. It's also believable that anything she did see wouldn't have computed as abuse, because look how well he, Jerry Sandusky, was able to hide his actions from all of the other people around him. And of course, our ego wants to say, well, as his spouse, as the person closest to him, she would have been the one person who would have known, who should have known, that one of their adopted children, five boys and a girl, that one of them was being molested. You know, there's all of this sense that she should have known something was wrong. And the truth is, as one psychiatrist said, you know, Jerry Sandusky shaped her reality. You know, he shaped the reality of everyone around them. So here was someone who was very good at explaining away his behavior, at really setting things up. And it's real easy to create a spectrum and say, okay, she was either a victim like everyone else and completely duped and therefore deserving of our sympathy and deserving of our support and our outreach to her, being there for her, or the victim or accomplice. That, you know, if you are the wife of a child sex abuser, that therefore you somehow should have known, there's that lovely should word, and therefore are just as guilty, or are guilty by extension. And we're going to talk about that in the case of Gary Flakes as well. So it's recognizing, okay, we have this unsettling ambivalence that comes up. We have this sense that somehow we should be able to discern whether or not Dottie Sandusky is an innocent victim or just as much of a monster as her husband is. And the truth is, this is something that we all struggle with because it's inside of us. And I see we have a question from a caller, so we're going to take this call and see what's going on here. Or maybe not, because there we go.
Hello.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I just have a quick question.
Yes,
I can understand maybe she didn't know. Now that all the evidence is out and all of the information is out, living now, would she understand anxiety?
You're breaking up. So is the question whether or not now that the information is out, she would stay in the relationship?
Right.
That's a good question. So the question would be, what would it mean if she were to leave the marriage? Does that mean she's dedicating herself to saying, okay, I'm separating myself from him and his actions, or does it have any greater implications of, you know, he's going to prison. So does that mean she'll visit him, not visit him? Where is her level of forgiveness in all of this? Because that's the hard thing, especially when you've, like, especially since one of the children who came forward, whose testimony wasn't used but was held in abeyance, was her own adopted son. And it's getting clear on why would we basically say, I'm going to sever all ties with someone because of something they did that I now know about. And it comes from our own fears. I don't want to have to deal with that person. I don't want to have to talk to that person. And we're going to talk about that a little bit with Gary Flakes' case, because the parents of the two children that died, the 13-year-old and the 15-year-old boys that were shot randomly by Gary and his friend, you know, he has offered to sit down under any terms and conditions and do some restorative justice, have a conversation with them about what happened and how they feel and where they're unable to forgive him and all of that stuff. And to date, they have not responded to any of those requests. So when someone says, you know, if I decide to stay in the relationship, that doesn't mean I condone the behavior. That doesn't mean that I believe he's innocent or that I'm, you know, standing by my man no matter what. What it means is I'm willing to recognize that, yes, people do things that are less than loving. People do things that are harmful to other people. And at the same time, you know, I can still be compassionate and hold that space, because the truth is we all have that within ourselves. And I'm not saying that means we're all, you know, capable of molesting children, although I'm sure that that's possible as well. But what I mean by that is we all have that capacity to cross a line and then cover up our actions. You know, it could be as simple as, you know, stealing office paper, you know, but it yeah, depends on our own mindsets around that. And can we still hold space for that conversation to heal the part of us that acts that way?
Uh-huh. Can I interject?
Absolutely.
I can be a forgiving person, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I want to be involved.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying, you know, she may not want to be involved. She may not want to see him. She may not want to do anything. And she may choose to end the relationship. The question is, why are we doing it? Are we doing it because we don't want to look at them and we don't want them in our lives, which means we don't want to look at that part of ourselves that would do that? Or are we simply doing it because it just doesn't resonate with me to put any energy into that? Not because I don't want to look at it, but simply because I want to move on with my life and I want to do other things, but I'm willing to heal that part of me that gets so upset at what I see out there. Does that make sense?
It does in one part, but I'm thinking personally, if my husband was to commit such, I mean, that is, to me, putting that out or some things that are just really a conflict in my moral values.
Right.
I can forgive you, but I don't necessarily want to be around you.
Right. And just look at why. You know, I mean, I can understand that completely. I can say, okay, I have no interest in spending any time or energy having you in my life. I have no interest being friends with you, being married to you, or anything else. And I'm not putting those walls up and walking away because I don't want to look at it. I'm simply recognizing that's not something I want in my life. Do you see how there's a difference between it having a charge and honoring yourself and saying, you know what, not interested in having you in my life? That's where the inner peace comes from. When we're pushing people away or saying, you're out of here, you know, hit the road, Jack, you know, because we don't want to look at it, that's different from just saying, yeah, you know what, that's really not behavior. It's kind of like when a kid is acting up and is doing stuff, you can either stay present to it and just go, yeah, dude, that's so not acceptable behavior. Or we can get angry about it. And it's that differentiation. We can get angry and send them to their room because I don't want you in my space. I don't want to deal with you right now, as opposed to, dude, you're wearing me out. See the difference in the feeling of that? Yep, we might have lost our caller. But thank you so much for talking with us on the air about that. Appreciate it. So let's go back to the conversation here. So we've got Dottie, and we're going to take a quick break in just a minute, and then we've got Gary Flakes. What we're talking about here is recognizing that other people's behavior does not have to steal our peace. And we give other people's behavior our peace when we put those walls up, when we say, I'm not going to forgive them. I'm not going to have compassion for them. And a lot of times we'll say, I forgive someone, and yet at the same time, the truth is, We're watching them. You know, we're waiting to see, are they going to screw up? What are they going to do? You know, we really pay attention to where do we want to hold them accountable above and beyond what's ours to do. I'm sure if there was any evidence that Dottie Sandusky knew in any way, shape, or form consciously what her husband was doing, that yes, then charges should be brought against her to be accountable for that. But the question is, did her silence aid and abet Jerry Sandusky, her husband's criminal acts? Was she just as guilty as he was? And the truth is, if you look at what different psychiatrists say and stuff, is that you can't judge that, you know, because if they have the evidence, like I personally was sexually abused as a child and once had a conversation with my dad about how it was possible that that went on for 5 years under their very roof and under their very nose. And he got tears in his eyes and he said, honey, if I had even suspected that this was going on, I would have put an end to it. I would have immediately taken action. And he did. Once he had evidence that it was happening, he immediately took action. And it's that recognition of, you know, if I knew, then I would. But we so don't want to believe. I remember someone whose husband was physically abusing, not sexually abusing, but physically abusing their child. And she so didn't want to believe it because it doesn't compute in our brains. Our brain says, how could anyone possibly do that to their own children? It just doesn't compute. And so therefore, we don't see the evidence. And it's just like when people reach out to family members or friends before they kill themselves, people will then afterwards read in and say, wow, you know what? there was this evidence and this evidence. We'll put together the little itty-bittiest pieces and details that now make sense because there's an X at the end. We understand that Y plus Z equals X. And so with X as the action itself, now we can go, wow. Yeah, okay, I can see how that could have been interpreted that way, or that could have been what was going on. Same with spouses who cheat, that sort of thing. Oh, now I see the evidence. Those late nights, the phone calls, the you know, business trips, you know, where he was unreachable for hours, you know, days on end. That sort of, you know, it's recognizing, okay, now I can see the evidence. The problem comes in is when we say, I want to be there for someone, but I don't want to be there if she knew, for example, with Dottie's case, you know, then all of a sudden what happens is, wow, if she did knew, or that there's a part of her that suspects she knows, now there's no incentive for her to process that and heal that for herself, because where would the support be if she did that? People would just immediately back away. So then, of course, it retards the fact that there'd be any kind of healing in that whatsoever. We're going to go back to our caller in just a minute once we talk about what's going on with Gary Flakes. In the meantime, this is Paula Langus Ryan, and you are listening to the Conflict Free Zone on Blog Talk Radio.
You can reach Paula at www.compassionatemediators.com or call her at 800-507-9244 for mediation services and information.
So there's a little more interesting story in my mind with Gary Flakes. Gary Flakes just turned 32. He spent 12 years and 5 months imprisoned for his role in the brutal slaying of two young boys, a 13-year-old boy and a 15-year-old boy, who were walking home from playing at another friend's house. And on Valentine's Day in 1997, Andy West Bay was 13. Scott, I'm not even going to be able to pronounce his name, Hallrick-Ziak, 15 years old, were walking home, and Gary Flakes was driving the vehicle. He was 16 years old. His 17-year-old friend, Jaron Grant, just randomly pulled out a gun and shot these two boys, shot Andy and Scott as they walked home in Colorado Springs. And, you know, he served his time. He is now out. He chose to say, he said, a prison is what you make of it. And he said it can be a monastery, it can be a 24-hour fitness place, or, as he said, for himself, it was a university. He made it a university. He educated himself. He matured. He grew up. And he decided that he wanted to become an asset to society. And what's interesting is here we've got the young man himself who, you know, he was skipping school. His mom lived in Detroit. That's where he lived. She sent him on a train to go live with his dad, who was an Army medic at Fort Carson, you know, hoping that would turn his life around. He was hanging with the wrong crowd. He got to fighting. He got kicked out of high school. He became friends with people like Jaron Grant, who accepted him, let him be, you know, the bad boy kind of thing. And, you know, wrong place, wrong time, bad choice. You know, he served his time. He was released. And now he is going around helping, especially mentoring kids of single moms, you know, finding a way to do something different, because he's convinced if someone had intervened when he was 15, his life would have taken a different course. Now, how is that any different from Jerry Sandusky's life, from anyone else's life that goes down the wrong road? And he believes, Gary Flakes actually believes the vast majority of prisoners can be rehabilitated, especially those who were convicted as teens, like himself, like Pastor Promise Lee, who's the founder and pastor of Relevant Word Ministries in Colorado Springs, who said the most interesting thing to him is that Gary Flakes chose to come back to Colorado Springs. He chose to come back to the very city where the crime had taken place and to reach out to kids in those communities to try and help them have a better life. Now, the question is, you know, do we forgive him? You know, he served his time. There are a lot of people that would like him to stay in prison. And like I said, you know, he has reached out. You know, as a mediator, I find it fascinating. He has reached out to the parents of Andy and Scott. He's reached out and said, look, I want to do restorative justice mediation. I want you to have a chance to look me in the eye and tell me your pain. Tell me how badly I hurt you. Tell me what this has done to your life so that we can create this healing process. you know, and he said, any conditions, any terms that you want, I'm acceptable to, I'm amenable to. They haven't yet responded, and that's always an opportunity for forgiveness. So we're going to take another question from our caller, or comment from our caller, and then we'll continue this discussion. Welcome back.
In that instance, when you kill someone,
did we lose you again? We're having a hard time with cell phones today for some reason. I apologize if we've lost you again. I will keep your line open in case we catch you back. What's interesting about this is I know I had a visceral reaction. You know, I was holding that compassionate space, and when I saw that the young man, that Gary Flakes, had been the driver as opposed to the person who actually pulled the trigger, who's also was also paroled. He was also released, having served his time, who then was rearrested for cocaine possession and is serving out 6 years for that. It was really interesting because when I saw that he had been just the driver, I found that my forgiveness quotient, my ability to be compassionate, my compassion quotient, actually rose. So he was not the shooter. He was just the kid who was at the wrong place, wrong time. And it's really interesting to see how that actually popped up for me. I see our callers back. We'll see if we can get a clear line this time. Welcome back. What's your question, hon?
No, I was just thinking to myself, in that instance, he'll never have real forgiveness because in an instance of murder, you can't ever get forgiveness. I mean, you can murder someone.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just saying that's interesting, yeah. So the belief is that if you murder something, it's unforgivable.
I mean, you can get forgiveness, but to the person that you created the act against, you'll never have real forgiveness.
Because they're dead.
Because they're dead. They can't come back to you, you know, and say that they forgive you. Although, you know, I believe in God, he forgives us for all sins. But, you know, personally, I just think that, you know, you can't ever get real forgiveness from that person. I mean, you can be forgiven for your sin, but from that person, you'll never get forgiveness.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to address that in just a second. I got to put you back on hold so we don't get feedback. So here we have the concept of forgiveness, which is a true concept. A lot of people hold to the fact that, you know, God and only God can forgive us and that these are the actions that we've taken. And if you have harmed someone, then and in killing them, that you cannot seek forgiveness or get forgiveness from them. And I want to point something out that in the belief system of Course of Miracles, which demonstrates that the only true forgiveness is the forgiveness that comes from us. Can we forgive ourselves for our actions? And this is what Jesus was trying to teach us. You know, can you forgive yourself for the actions that you took and move forward with your life? Be ye renewed by your thoughts. So can you decide, you know what, my past can't define me. And while I cannot make restitution or seek forgiveness face-to-face from the person whose life I've taken, I can seek forgiveness and talk to those people whose lives were most directly aligned with these two boys, such as the parents, offering to meet with the families, not just the parents, but the siblings as well. And can we take that information into heart and say, okay, even if they don't forgive me, sort of like we talked about Lindy Chamberlain, the mother of the little girl that was killed by dingoes 32 years ago, and how many people still don't forgive her, thinking that she was guilty, that she somehow contributed to the death of her child or was simply negligent in leaving the tent flap open for 30 seconds while she heated up milk for the other baby, for the younger child. It's recognizing where are we not forgiving and where are we not forgiving ourselves. And I've talked about it in the past, but the biggest way to forgive ourselves for anything is to recognize and say, it seemed like a good idea at the time. For this young man who was looking to fit in somewhere, anywhere, it seemed like a good idea at the time to be hanging out with Jaron Grant, to be driving this car. They were just driving down the street, and his friend just randomly took out a gun and started shooting kids and shot these two young boys for no discernible purpose. And he won't talk about the details of that night because he does want to focus on the future. He wants to keep moving forward. And he recognizes that what he did was horrendous. And he actually had written apologies that he had presented to the families when he was sentenced, recognizing his role. He doesn't see himself as a victim. He doesn't look for pity. He simply says, wow, this is what I created in this world. This is where I took someone's life. And how can I give back? And the best way we can be forgiven is to move forward into doing things that cannot replace what was lost, but that hold us up and that say, you know what, I'm going to contribute as much as I took by helping other kids live who might otherwise die. Let's go back to our caller because this is an awesome conversation and I'm very appreciative of her being here with us today. So what other thoughts do you have on this topic?
I actually like the fact that you have to forgive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I very much like that. However, he's not willing to really open up, discuss what was the issue at that time. It makes me wonder.
Okay, I'm sorry. I missed what you said. He wasn't willing to what?
If he's not open, that he's not willing to discuss something about the situation of what was in occurrence.
Well, I think the reason he's refusing to discuss the killings in detail is because it was covered so extensively in the trial that that's already been discussed and that was already out there. And his mindset is, let's talk about what we can do to help kids that are in trouble right now rather than go back and rehash why I did what I did or what Jaron Grant was thinking at the time or any of that. But instead, look, there are kids out there right now that are going through these same kinds of things. How do we prevent them from becoming me? That's sort of his message. And apparently he's an incredibly powerful speaker. He said when he talks to the kids publicly, he said he talks about his past, and he's very raw with them. He said he's incredibly real, and there was someone who was in the audience in Basalt when he talked with at-risk teens 4 years ago, so like a year after he was released from prison, and the guy said he was just incredibly powerful. And he said they now actually talk once a week. And he said he hopes he finds a platform where this story of his can inspire thousands of kids and thousands of people to help these kids so that they don't wind up going down that same road. So, you know, he served his time. He's committed to changing his life, changing the lives of other troubled youth. He made some comment about helping youth shift their thinking from street law to law school, to really how can they become truly contributing members of society in a massively positive way so that we stop this cycle. And that's what I find fascinating is here's this man who forgave himself enough to say, what can I give back? I can't give these two kids their lives back, but I can give thousands of other kids their lives back. And that's really, really powerful. I thank you so much for being with us here in the Conflict Free Zone. We have run out of time together. What an awesome topic. And I thank our caller for joining us in that conversation. And for those who are in the chat room, appreciate you being here as well. Look forward to having you back with us here on the Conflict Free Zone tomorrow. Have a great day.
Your host for today's Conflict Free Zone has been the compassionate mediator, Paula Langeth Ryan. For more information about transformational mediation, conflict resolution, and how compassionate mediators can help you have a more productive and peaceful life, visit CompassionateMediators.com. For more about Paula, to subscribe to Inner Transformation, her free monthly e-magazine, or to browse her Inner Transformation blog, visit PaulaLangethRyan.com. Be sure to check out the free gifts section where you'll find valuable no-cost tip sheets and reports to help you create inner and outer peace.